Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You look great. What have you been doing?
I found Zelthy. If you qualify, their providers can prescribe the same active ingredients in Ozempic and other expensive GLP-1s for 80 to 90% less without insurance. All on mine, shipped right to your door.
Get started with Zelthy today for just $39. Call #250 and say keyword care. That's care to #250.
Am I being honest right now in this conversation with this person? And just before you do anything, to watch yourself with your partner, with your friends, like, do I feel like I can be who I actually am?
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Radically Loved Radio. I wanted to create a place where people can go to get inspired, get motivated, or find some clarity and get tools to create a radically loved life. I will do my best to provide information on a variety of subjects, including yoga, holistic health, life coaching, spirituality, meditation, and overall mindful living. Each episode will bring you some of the world's best spiritual leaders, entrepreneurs, yoga teachers, coaches, along with some of my closest friends, and we will talk about their life experiences and journeys to create something more out of their lives and how they continue to grow to make that happen. Thanks for listening.
Hey everyone, 2020 is your year. Have you been dreaming of starting your own podcast? If you have, then this is the year to make it happen. Maybe it's an idea or something that you're really good at or something that you want to learn more about. Our friends Krista and Lindsay from the Almost 30 podcast just released the new Podcast Pro program to help you launch, market, and monetize the podcast of your dreams. Krista and Lindsay started Almost 30 in their closet floor while working full-time jobs in just 3 years. They turned it into a top-rated podcast with millions and millions of downloads worldwide. They've created such an incredibly supportive community. And in Podcast Pro, they're sharing exactly how they did it and all the secrets they learned along the way. You can sign up now at yourpodcastpro.com to launch your dream podcast. You can also find more information by clicking the info button of this particular podcast and check out the link there. And now back to our show. I was really excited to be able to meet with this next guest in person because her story really resonated with me and I really loved her book. We have Lauren McKinnon.
McKinnon.
Is it really? What is that?
There's all kinds of pronouncing. It's not an easy one. There's
McCowan. I used to know a McCowan, interestingly enough. Yeah, back in the day.
Probably not related to me.
How do you know?
I don't know for sure.
Okay.
Most of my family is not here.
Oh. Yeah. All right. Okay. Anyway, so here we are. You just wrote a really incredible book called We Are the Luckiest, and I'm so excited to chat with you about it. Just a quick little background, and we were talking just before I started recording, but one of the reasons why, and I get tons of books, right? Especially now, like I get a lot of publicists sending me books, but for some reason, you know, I was going through all the books and then I saw yours and I'm like, this looks cool. I'm like, what's this about? And of course, like the first page, that was it. That's just
really?
The first intro page where you start talking about, and I'll let you tell the story, but where you basically wake up after going to your brother's wedding. Mm-hmm. I was hooked. Mm-hmm. So, and to me, coming from a family of alcoholics and addicts and mm-hmm. being in and out of the rooms of AA when I was young, you know, with my family members, I'm very familiar with addiction, and I work with a largely sober community. So for me, it spoke to me very much. So I was really excited to chat with you. So thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you. No, thank you. And that's, I never know how, I assume my publicist had sent my book to you.
Yes.
Or, yeah. So you never know because they go out to all kinds of people and you never know who's going to say, oh, this is interesting to me.
Yeah. Right?
Especially people who haven't experienced addiction themselves. Right. I always like when it reaches them.
Yeah. I mean, to me, and this is my opinion, I feel like addiction can relate to every single person in one degree or another. And I really love that you speak to, it is your story, but I know that there's a specific avatar that you're speaking to with being a mother and being able to connect deeply with yourself, your highest self. And to me, I felt that it could speak to everybody because there were so many great gems in there about just how we numb mm-hmm. ourselves and our connection to who we are and mm-hmm. the things that we sort of turn away from because they're uncomfortable. And so, yeah, like I want to speak to, I have a slew of questions and I'm hoping we can get to all of them, but just for the people that are listening to this that maybe haven't heard of you before or what you've done, like what inspired you to write this book, and just give us a tiny background on who you are and what set you on this path.
Sure. So I grew up in Colorado to a pretty normal suburban existence. One brother, I'm the oldest. I grew up in a drinking family where it was just a very normal thing. Now I can look back and see, and I don't have to dig for it. It's open. There's a lot of alcohol problems, you know. And I left Colorado for Boston when I graduated from college, and I went to a drinking college. I entered into a drinking career in marketing and advertising, and so it was just so normal. And I never thought otherwise. I never thought about not drinking or being around people who weren't drinking. And it wasn't until later, you know, when I would spend time with like my ex-husband's family or something, and I would see, oh, not everyone like drinks a lot together. You know, not all families do that. I thought it's what people did. And drinkers tend to gravitate towards people who drink like they do.
Right? Yeah.
And that's what I did. So overall, you know, I get asked a lot, like, when did you know that your drinking was not okay? And it's like, now I can look back and I can see as early as, you know, 17 or 18, that I knew that I really liked it more than other people. Like, I needed it more. Or there was this one moment when I had a high school graduation party at my family's restaurant. We also owned a restaurant, which is very boozy. And I could drink freely at that point. It was like, you know, you're out of high school, you're going to college, whatever. And it was my graduation party. It was right before I went to college. And I had a pretty bad eating disorder at that time. Like, all these things had been building. Like, I really had no tools to cope with anything. And so alcohol was perfect. It was great. And I was pouring my like third drink of the day in the middle of the day. And I was pretty well intoxicated at that point. And there were a lot of like circumstances at that time that I was wound really tight. Like, I had a lot of family stuff going on. I had my body issues. I was wound really tight. And by the time the third drink came around, I couldn't remember what I was so worried about. I felt so good. I felt like everything was possible. I was fine. Like, all worries were gone. And I remember like taking a sip of that very strong drink and thinking, if I can just stay like this, everything will be okay. And I was 17, you know?
Yeah.
So the answer to that is like, I knew, but I couldn't know that I like really needed something. This thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, fast forward, I got married, became a mom. When I became a mom, my drinking changed significantly. And I hear a lot of women say that. I mean, our bodies change, our hormones change, our patterns change. We aren't sleeping as much. I worked full time. Everything just changed. And I remember feeling like it wasn't working anymore the way I wanted it to work. My anxiety got so crazy bad at that point. But I kept drinking, and I kept actually drinking more to try to, like, fix it.
Fix it, right.
Yeah. Thinking that that was going to fix it. Because it did. You know, that's the thing. All these things that we do to cope, they actually do work.
Yeah.
For a while.
Exactly. They're sort of this short-term fix for something that is the undercurrent that's constantly there. You know, we find these little band-aids of mm-hmm. things that work. And then isn't it so funny that the mind goes into this place of, I want more of that. Let's do more. Right. Like, well, I can relate to the addictive mentality because I definitely have that gene. You know, for me, it manifests in like sugar addiction, mm-hmm. you know, or any type of like consistent thing. Like, oh, this works. This makes me feel safe. I want to do this every single time. You know, like a little bit OCD. Yeah. So I can totally relate to that. And I think for a lot of people, you know, if with alcohol, I think it's very specific, right? Because it affects your body. It's a toxin, you know, it you're inebriated, like your senses, your ability to connect. To me, the biggest thing is the connection with the body, mm-hmm. right? And if you were already having all of these issues compounding with disconnecting, mm-hmm. this was just adding on to that. And it's almost like, oh, this makes me feel good because I'm not feeling the discomfort and the unease
of being disconnected.
Right. So after a while, like, you're just feeling more of the disconnection. It's almost, it takes you to the opposite end of the spectrum.
Yeah, it totally does. But it does work for a time. I mean, I say, like, it was actually a very intelligent thing for me to do. To drink, to do all these, like, coping, it's our body's natural desire or to seek comfort, and it's a very primal, intuitive thing that we do. It just goes awry, and it manifests in, you know, we get addicted. And alcohol addiction, drug addiction especially, manifests in some pretty ugly ways. So to answer your question about why, you know, why I wrote the book, I got separated from my husband in 2012, and then 2013, my daughter was 3 at the time, and then in 2013, when she was 4, we went to my brother's wedding, and my drinking was really scary at that point. It was really dangerous. I had already had a DUI. I really didn't know what was going to happen when I started drinking anymore, and but I was working really hard to keep that, to keep it,
yeah,
you know, and I left her in a hotel room overnight at my brother's wedding and woke up the next morning not in our hotel room. And by the grace of God, she found my family, you know, this little 4-year-old. And so everything was okay as far as she was concerned. You know, physically, she was fine. Mm-hmm. But it obviously, that was a horrific incident. And that was my start towards working at sobriety. It was like a few weeks later, I went to my first 12-step meeting. But I did not get sober after that. It took me over a year after that. And that year really between 2013 and 2014 was such a intensely excruciating year, because there was a thing that was killing me, and I could have lost my daughter. I mean, everything was on the line, and yet I couldn't stop. I would put together periods of time, but then I would go back, and it was just so confounding to me. And I started writing in that time just to kind of figure out. I'd always wanted to write, but this gave me something to write about, and I needed, like, the writing really helped me figure out what was going on and sort of metabolize it.
Yeah.
And then I started a blog, I started a podcast in 2015, and I just started really talking about what was going on, because I had this sense that there was this much bigger thing than just, like, Laura has an alcohol problem. You know, it was like, we're all hiding, we're all numbing out, we're all lying about how we're doing. You know, and I was a yoga, I am a yoga teacher too. So I had this, like, sort of spiritual background. And I don't know, there was something in me that just needed to talk and write. And I knew pretty early, like, I'd always wanted to write a book. And then it was like, I never imagined that this would be the thing I was going to write about, but that's what happened.
Yeah. And I'm thank you for doing that, because it's really good. You know, one of the things that you are really passionate about, I'm like, passionate about truth telling? Yeah, you are. But about being honest. And that's one of the things that I really loved about your story, was how honest it was and how real it felt. Like, mm-hmm. I'm reading it and I'm like, man, she's going for it. Like, this is just so raw and real. And I feel like not enough of us realize it. And you speak to this, and I'd like to hear a little bit more about you, to unpack a little bit more on how we are dishonest with ourselves, mm-hmm. and how we don't even realize, mm-hmm. we're dishonest with ourselves. Mm-hmm. You talk about people pleasing. Mm-hmm. So I want to just unpack that a little bit more for the people that are listening that maybe don't realize that they're not being fully honest.
Right. So we typically think of being dishonest as, you know, just outright deceit and manipulating people with lies. But it's much different than that. Like, so I'll back it up. I, through all this work in sobriety, I realized that I started lying very young. Like, I learned to do it in my family to sort of keep peace. And, you know, a lot of kids do that because we have to survive these environments. Mm-hmm. And my parents got divorced when I was very young. My dad is a difficult person. And it was sort of like, I know you're laughing, but it's like, it's the easiest way to summarize it. I love him, but he is, on his own admission, very difficult. And, you know, his moods are volatile. My mom's also complicated. I mean, I had an okay childhood, but there was a lot of dysfunction there. And I learned to lie. We all play roles. And I was like, I'm the okay one. You know, I'm the happy one. Everything's fine. And as I'm sure you are very sensitive to, it's like, what do I need to be to make this okay right now? You know, and that, you learn to lie, right? You learn to leave yourself and to lie. And not trust what you're experiencing as something that's okay and valid and true, even, right? So I just carried that forward. Like, I kept being that person that I wanted everyone to like me. I shape-shifted very easily, and it worked, right? It got me friends, and it... Mm-hmm. People seem to like that image that I presented. Fast forward into adulthood, alcohol was a big part of that. Like, mm-hmm. alcohol let me pretend even more.
Yeah.
Right. So you get to this point as an adult where it's like, there's the outside Laura, and then there's the inside Laura, and they're completely disconnected, right? No one really knows what's going on with me. I don't even really know what's going on with me. And not only is there one outside Laura, there's like 15 outside Lauras. There's like the one at work, and the one that this person knows, and the one that my husband knows, and the one that this friend knows, and they're all a little bit different, you know? And so... when I got sober, it became very necessary for me to create one version of myself to maintain my sobriety. And one of the big pieces about sobriety is sort of emotional sobriety and looking at your relationships. Oh. And what is working and what isn't, because that ultimately is what causes you the most pain, right? And I did work with a sponsor, and... we went through, you know, all these relationships, and there was like this repeating pattern in the ones that were really painful and difficult to me that I thought I was sort of victimized in, because it's a certain type of personality, like a difficult, angry, you know, sort of big personality type person that I felt had bullied me. And it was like, you're part in this, Laura, is that you have been dishonest all along. Like, you have never told this person how you feel. If they, when they do what they do, they're just being themselves. Here you are pretending like it's okay all the time for years and years. And then you blow up and you can't take it anymore. And you're deeply resentful too. I was people pleasing, right? A lot of, I think, women especially do this. And sort of think of it as this, almost like this noble quality.
Right.
You know? And it's dishonesty, right? Because you're not presenting the truth of who you are and what you want. And then it creates resentment inside of you. And you feel like you're victimized by your relationships and by your life.
Yes.
And the good news is that was on me. Like, I could be responsible for that. And I've had to learn how to do that. And, you know, it's a process. Obviously, you don't flip a switch and all of a sudden you're like, and a lot of times people say, like, what do you mean? So you just tell the truth about everything all the time? It's like, no, there's discernment, of course. But it's like, you do something that upsets me and I don't say anything and I pretend like it's okay. I have just created a false relationship between us. Mm-hmm. I'm teaching you how to treat me in a way that I don't like.
I have a question about that, because I think that there's this is a huge thing that everybody does, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, I do something that upsets you and your instinct or automatic is it's okay. Mm-hmm. But it's really not okay, right? So now you've created now this different energy around that relationship. So how then, because of fear, right? There's the fear of, you don't want to make me feel bad.
Right.
You don't want to feel bad. So in a situation like that, first of all, the fact that as women, we are in almost conditioned to be this sort of people-pleasing type of, like, don't make waves because you're going to seem like you're an asshole, keep the peace. You have to just be polite. Mm-hmm. You be nice. Don't be weird. You know, it's like,
don't be weird. Because
then it's like you become a problematic person if you start to say, oh, that really bothered me. All of a sudden now you're difficult.
Yeah.
Right. So, like, how do we navigate that? You speak to it in the book, you know, but I'm just curious, like, just in general as a woman, like, raising a daughter, mm-hmm. like, how do we navigate that?
Well, it's obviously a huge topic. I mean, I think for me, once you feel the pain of not of living that way, it becomes pretty clear that it's not worth it. Mm. And so much of our perceived rejections or our perceived, like, we imagine that people are going to think certain things about us if we speak our mind. And they might, but most of the time, it doesn't really matter. It's us that suffers. Again, okay, your point is valid. Like, there is a cultural sort of, you become a difficult person right. as a woman if you behave this way. I mean, look, I think it's a real challenge, and I think it's something that you have to push against that edge of what's comfortable for you and then see what happens. Mm-hmm. The people that... I feel like it's such a good barometer and litmus test of who you actually want in your life, right? So people that are going to sit, because I have different people in my life that want me to be who I actually am, right? There's a distinction between just being honest and real and then becoming a difficult person, right? But we sometimes don't see that.
Right.
We're like, if I even show up at all like this, yeah. it's going to be a problem. It's like, maybe, but probably not, you know?
Well, I relate this to, and I don't want to, you know, go off topic, but I relate this so much to social media in the way that we present ourselves in social media, right? Like the glossy, the picture perfect, like my life is amazing. Mm-hmm. In the background, I'm like suffering from anxiety and I'm miserable in my relationships. And
right.
I'm not going to show that picture because it's not as glossy as this one.
Yeah, no, social media is brutal that way. And I don't even know how to like begin with that, because I think the thing that we all have to know is just that it's not real, right? Even the most real, even like I try to be pretty real, but I still only show 10% of what's going on in my life because it's also private, you know? So yeah, it's fascinating how much we do that, and we sort of, it's a interesting, tricky relationship that I have with social media. And I've checked out for long periods of time and then come back. And I think the important thing is just to even have the base level awareness of, am I being honest right now in this conversation with this person? And just before you do anything, to watch yourself with your partner, with your friends, like, do I feel like I can be who I actually am? And if the answer is no, that can be terrifying for a lot of people. And I work with a lot of people who feel like they are unknown in their lives. Yeah. So it's something, you know, something that you can actually do that I help tell people to do. And I talk about it a little in the book, is like, start writing things down. There's something very alchemical about taking thoughts out of you and putting them onto paper, right? Like, you work with the body and you know, like, these things live in our bodies and they don't, like, they get trapped there and stuck there and cause all kinds of problems. One thing that you can do, though, that anyone can do, and it's free and it's available all the time. I mean, I have this journal sitting right here and no one can see it, but like, I just every morning just dump all the things out. And it's so important because you kind of find out what the truth is as you do that, right? A lot of people are in a place where like, I know this isn't right, but I don't even know who I am. It's like, well, you can find out. You can find out. And that's a really easy way to start.
Yeah. It's such a cathartic process for me. Like, I'm a big time I'm like a journal. I'm a journal addict too. You know, I like to buy the nice journals and they're all just kind of started at the beginning. And then I start, you know what I'm saying?
This one was a gift. I would never buy myself one this like fancy. Yeah. Because I would probably do the same thing. But no, I just, because a lot of people, you know, they can't afford therapy or they don't know where to start. And that's something everyone can do. You can start to write things down. And if you're afraid someone's going to read it, burn those pages up and rip them apart. But you can start to get to know yourself and see what you're up to. The other thing is it's not like the dishonesty is also born of this intelligent like adaptation as a child, almost always. It's not because you're a piece of crap that you're going around lying, but I think that's something real, you know? It's like people, we love to hate on ourselves. Yeah. We love to think that we're just terrible. It's like, you're not lying because you're a terrible person. You're lying because you're afraid and you're trying to get love in whatever way you learned how to get it. It's just not working anymore.
Yeah. Oh, so good.
Uveda has one simple vision. They want to create a healthier and happier world using the intelligence of Mother Nature. Uveda believes in the ancient principles of Ayurveda and want to bring them to you in a modern and easy way. They created innovative and full support supplements that contain only the best, highest quality organic and wild harvested ingredients. And now they have just introduced a brand new essential oils line to go with your health journey. One of my favorite essential oils is the immunity. Aromatherapy can help boost your immune system by providing your body the strength to heal and the support it so desperately needs. The doctors over at Uveda recommend to pair the essential oil with the My Healthy Immunity Supplement Kit in order to help strengthen your immune system to the fullest. For me, it is a non-negotiable as I travel all the time and I'm trying to take care of my health. For more information, go to uveda.com and don't forget to use the promo code ROSIE to get a special discount on your next order. And now back to our show.
What was the biggest gift that you wanted to give the readers of your book?
I definitely wrote the book for anyone who would want to read it, but I specifically, well, I didn't write the book for anyone. That's not true. I wrote the book for me, but I want whoever reads it, whoever needs it to read it. But I really want mothers who have struggled with addiction to read it. I want to talk to her because that was by far the hardest part. That's why I opened the book with what I open it with, because I want to look at her and say, like, this is where we're going right here, you and me. I know you feel like you're the worst and you're not. So and what I say over and over in the book is, like, this is a human experience, period. It's not unique. All of these things that we do are just, they're born out of this intelligent instinct, this very human instinct to soothe ourselves and get love. And it's just gone awry. Like, we still have it in our society that addiction is this moral issue, is kind of this unique thing. And it's really not. It's pretty much the human condition, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So speaking to that is like, say, to me, what I want people to hear is that there's nothing that counts them out. You know, there's nothing that counts them out of the possibility of this beautiful life that's available to all of us, whether it's addiction or death or illness or whatever. We all have something, yeah. right? And those, that thing is an invitation. Yeah. Always, it's an invitation.
What is the biggest lesson that you learned about yourself after writing the book?
I have never been someone that I thought could stay with something to the end. I don't know if you're familiar with Enneagram, but I'm an Enneagram 7. I'm like, ideas, new ideas, more ideas. You know, writing a book is extraordinarily difficult and it takes a long time. So I learned that I could do that, you know, that I could be someone who stays with something for a long time. I feel like that about my marriage. You know, I kind of like wanted out, and then I leave things too easily, I think. And this was something I really stayed for. So it showed me that I could do that.
Wow. I love that.
Thanks.
No, it's because I can totally relate to what you're saying about being, I don't actually remember what, I've done it before, the Enneagram. I don't actually remember what number
what
I'm
going
to
have to, it's so fascinating.
I'm gonna have to look. But it's, yeah, it's so interesting to just, you know, one of the things too is I feel like there are certain people out there that are designed to be a chameleons that really thrive in the change and the newness of different things, and they can stay completely unattached and be fulfilled. That's not me. I'm just like, no, I'm done. This isn't working. And I'm just impatient, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know.
You might be a 7.
Yeah, I'm like, that's what it's. I'm feeling like I related to so much to your story. Like what you're saying, I get it. I'm so grateful that you did write the story and that you are really passionate about speaking to our own efficacy to self-inquiry, mm-hmm. because I think it's really important. I think we don't do enough of it, even with all of the tools and information out there. I think we're in a perfect age and time, culturally, socioeconomically, that we're in a state of suffering, mm-hmm. and we're perfectly primed for escape.
Oh, totally.
So having tools like your book and people like you out there talking about this, I think is extremely healing for so many. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
I think totally. We are, my friend Elena says we are brilliant escape artists. Like, we've invented 1,000 ways a day to check out. So And yes, we are suffering. And yes, we have extraordinary capacity to change too and to heal. I think that I do see a lot of suffering. I also see that I feel like we are, there's a lot of, and I don't think this is just because I'm sober, but there's a lot of people that are interested in sobriety of all forms, right? And I think that, to me, that is so heartening, you know, that and it speaks to our capacity for good. We hear so much bad all day long, and there really is, there also is a lot of bad and horrible things happening and difficulty. But I also believe in the human spirit and the capacity to triumph in these like amazing ways, you know, and it starts with the individual always. And I think that's the best message. It's like one of the main points in the book is like, what I have learned is that I'm responsible for my experience. I am. And that seems like really bad news at first. It's like, oh, wait, I can't blame all these things. It's like, no, you can't. And that's the best news, because you get to do something. You can do something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So good. Well, I want to be respectful of your time, so I've got a couple more questions for you. But for the people that are listening to this and want to reach out to you, or they want to get the book, where can they go for more information?
Yeah, so everything is on my website, which is my name, Laura McCowan. And my book is at anywhere books are sold, so Amazon, bookstores. Go to the bookstores. Go to the indie bookstores. I'm on Instagram. That's my favorite sort of social media platform. It's my name as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for that. And for those of you listening to the podcast, if you go to the info button on whatever platform you're listening to this on, all of the links that Laura just mentioned, all of those links will be on there. Okay, so my final question, I ask this to all of my guests. And so one of the reasons why I started the podcast was because I wanted to create a place where people could go to feel supported, to just get information, to get inspired. And it's the idea that we are all radically loved and radically supported by God, universe, mm-hmm. source, baby Buddha, Krishna, whatever higher power of your understanding, that we are radically supported. Yeah. The universe works for us and not against us.
Yeah.
So the question to you is, how do you feel radically loved?
Oh, so I don't know if this is answering your question, but it's the first thing I thought of. Woke up this morning like at 5 a.m. because I'm on East Coast time, right? And I had only slept, I went to bed pretty late, so I didn't sleep much. But I, you know, traveled here yesterday. I'm traveling for my book. I've been sober for 5 years, which is a complete impossibility at one time. It was like, and I thought this morning, traveling always makes me nostalgic. I was thinking about how in 2014, I came to San Francisco and I was not yet sober. I was at the very end of my drinking. I went to the Sutro Baths in San Francisco with a friend, and I just had this moment of like the waves and I definitely experienced God in nature, and especially the ocean. And I had one of those moments where it was like, it felt like a ghost had gone through me, you know, like a good ghost, like a girl, come on, you know, and I could feel, I posted about it this morning, but like, it's like a future ghost, you know, like pulling me forward. Like when you have those sensations or those feelings of what's possible, and you can't, there's no words for it. You don't know. I didn't have the exact picture, but it was like, run towards this. And then waking up here today, 5 years later, and in California again, and it's this whole different life. It's like I had been spoken to all along, for sure.
I love that.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for all of the work that you're doing and that you will continue to do. I'm excited for all the future books that you will continue to write.
Yes.
And I am just so grateful. What a Thank you for your honesty and your authenticity and your just your wholehearted ability to just show up as you and to really give those of us out there that are wanting to be mothers one day the courage to just be fully who we are. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Hey everyone, I hope you enjoyed this episode. I am so excited to continue to do this. Please share this with your friends. Email us, message us on Instagram at Rosie Acosta or on Twitter at Rosie Acosta. Subscribe on iTunes, write a review. We love doing this, so please help us continue to keep this podcast going. Thanks for listening.